Hello and welcome to the audio transcription of The Back Page,
the Talking Sports newspaper.
Dated the 9th to the 15th of January, 2019. Produced by Vista. Telephone 0116 249 8839. Items are selected, read and recorded by the Gartry Audio Services team. The team members this week are
Andrew,
Daniel,
Jeff,
Lee,
Malcolm
and Tony.
City News.
Ibora seals his move home after unsettled period in Leicester. Vicente Ibora has left Leicester City, completing a £9 million move to Villarreal. The Spaniard heads back to his homeland just 18 months after joining City in a £12 million switch from Sevilla, having failed to maintain a regular place in Claude Puel's side. Ibora had been given leave by City manager Puel this month to return to Spain to spend time with his family, who have been struggling to settle in England. While he has been away, the move to Villarreal has been finalised, Ibora signing a 4.5-year deal with the La Liga relegation battlers. Ibora had made just 3 Premier League starts for City this term and has recently dropped further down the central midfield pecking order following Hamza Choudhury's impressive performances. In total, the 30-year-old made 37 appearances for City, scoring 4 goals. Upon the announcement of his departure, Ibora released a poignant message, thanking fans and the club's late chairman, Vichai Srivadhanaprabha. "It's time to say goodbye," said Ibora. "It's not easy for my family and me, but we feel that it's time to come back home. Along this season and a half, I felt privileged for wearing this jersey and playing beside these great supporters. You made me feel one of yours. Thanks from my heart for your unconditional support. Thanks also to all the employees, managers, coaching staff, teammates and everyone who makes our day by day easier. I don't want to finish this letter without remembering the boss. We will never forget you. Thank you for everything you did for this club. You will always be with me, Foxes." Ibora could be joined in leaving the King Power Stadium by fellow midfielder Adrian Silva. Fenerbahce are to open talks with City over signing out of favour Silva, according to reports in Turkey. Fenerbahce sports director Damian Comoli is reportedly travelling to Leicester to open talks with City over a possible move for the Portugal international. Sporting Lisbon are also understood to be interested in taking back their former captain, who joined City at the start of last season in a £25 million deal. Puel has admitted Silva could be on his way out of the club after falling down the pecking order behind academy graduate Hamza Choudhury, Papi Mendy, Wilfred Ndidi and now Matty James, who has returned from a lengthy spell on the sidelines. If Silva joined Fenerbahce, he would again link up with City teammate and former Sporting colleague Islam Slimani, who is on season-long loan at the Turkish club.
Puel's youngsters feeling the pace of change.
Leicester City 1, Southampton 2.
There is much to admire sometimes about what Claude Puel is trying to achieve at Leicester City, but at times the Frenchman, who is struggling to turn the growing tide of opinion against him, doesn't help himself, and on other occasions he isn't helped by his players. When Puel took over at City, he faced a bigger job than many realised. On the face of it, this was a club bankrolled by an enthusiastic, ambitious and dedicated owner with a team that had been Premier League champions just a short time before. After a tough start to the campaign under Craig Shakespeare, they were towards the wrong end of the table, but there wasn't any sense that there was a real crisis looming. The owners took the decision to move Shakespeare on because they wanted a manager with a clear vision for the future who could plot a path for the club and evolve City into a sustainable challenger at the top end of the Premier League. They plumped for Puel, whose reputation for developing young players preceded him, and he was taken on for the challenge of transforming City. He faced the tough ask of phasing out the ageing stars who brought City their greatest ever triumph, of breaking up their title-winning squad, of moving on club legends and rebuilding City in a younger image. He set about his task amid the heightened level of expectation amongst supporters after the most incredible title win. It is quite admirable and brave, considering that expectation, how he has given youth their big chance. Would Ben Chilwell have developed into an England international quite so quickly? Or Harry Maguire, James Maddison or Demaria Gray? Would 20-year-old Harvey Barnes have been recalled to play a part in the Premier League after half a season in the Championship? The one criticism that can be aimed at Puel now is that all seems to be happening too quickly, that the change towards a more youthful side has not been gradual, it has been sudden, and based on recent performances, the youngsters are crying out for more senior support. In the second half against a Saints side that had shown signs of rejuvenation under new boss Ralph Hasenhüttl, but were still in the bottom three of the table, City fielded a side that Kasper Schmeichel, Wes Morgan and Jamie Vardy aside was incredibly young and inexperienced. Even Harry Maguire, with all his experiences with England at the World Cup, is only in his third season in the Premier League. They were crying out for an experienced head in the middle of the park to help them keep their nerve as they chased a game after an astonishing first half in which they conspired to shoot themselves not just in the foot but square between the eyes. There was no composure or guile as City pressed, dominating possession against the 10 men after Jan Vali sending off without really threatening to score. Towards the end, despite Gray, Barnes and Rashid Ghazal all being on the pitch to complement Maddison and Vardy, City laboured to create any meaningful chances. With the Saints camped in their own penalty box, City switched the play from one flank to another too slowly to move the entrenched Saints around to create space, and then simply pumped the ball into the box where a giant figure of Janik Vestergaard gobbled up every high ball. The Saints may never again face a more comfortable rear guard action. And this is where Puel doesn't help himself. He is adamant he doesn't need to bring anyone in during this transfer window when it is so painfully obvious his young players need more help. They need an older, wiser head on the pitch to provide inspiration, to guide them and to help them when they face tough challenges in games. Someone they can look up to. Puel pointed to the fact he utilised so many of the title winners at Newport County in the FA Cup, and they still couldn't overcome the League Two side, but it is a fresh face and not a fading force City need. West Ham United have just signed former Arsenal and Manchester City player Samir Nasri. The 31-year-old is exactly the kind of player City need to bring in now. Clever on the ball, experienced, and someone the younger players can turn to for inspiration. City can no longer simply pass the ball to Riyad Mahrez in times of trouble and expect the miracle. Those days have gone. Puel won't bring in a player like Nasri because he is totally committed to his way. The players certainly didn't help him either against Saints with some kamikaze moments that gifted the visitors both their goals. Never look a gift horse in the mouth, and Southampton certainly didn't. Pape Mende had a shocker. He always seemed to be City's last man for some reason, and it was on the cover that he conceded the softest and most needless of penalties for a challenge on Shane Long, a week after Mark Albrighton conceded the decisive penalty with a pointless handball at Newport. Then it was Mende again whose shocking back pass let in Long for what proved to be the winner. Managers can't legislate for those kinds of mistakes or for the growing anger in the crowd. Before the game, the cameras captured the moment when an over-officious steward confiscated a small placard with the words Puel out on it. It was held by a more senior female City fan who had every right to express her frustration, whether you agree with her or not. There are a growing number who share her sentiment, and they won't be silenced, especially by stewards, unless City's home form improves dramatically. If it was a tough job Puel faced when he took over, it is getting a lot tougher now, with many fans losing faith in this project. City remain eighth in the Premier League, a strong position, but it would be naive to think everything is rosy in the City Garden right now. Among the Blue Army, it is anything but, and Puel must recognise that.
Local football.
No Wembley trips for County fans after Vars defeats. County representation in the FA Vars is over for another year after Shepshed Dynamo and Leicester Navarna both lost their fourth round ties. Nirvana suffered stoppage time heartbreak away to Coventry United as they were knocked out just moments away from extra time. They broke the deadlock on the half hour when an own goal gave them the lead, but Coventry turned the game around by half time to lead 2-1 at the break. Leicester were then reduced to 10 men, but hit back through Suleiman Nasser's leveller. Extra time looked likely when Coventry were also reduced to 10, until a 93rd-minute winner meant heartbreak for Nirvana. Shepshed were also edged out on the road as they went down 2-1 to Northern League side Hebburn Town. That was despite taking a first-half lead through Joe Pheasant, but the game turned on a 5-minute spell at the end of the first half. Carl Weimark missed a penalty, which would have put Shepshed 2-0 up, and instead Hebburn equalised in the first half stoppage time to give the hosts momentum. Hebburn then took the lead 7 minutes after the break, and Shepshed could not force an equaliser, so their Wembley dream is also over. In the Southern Premier Central, Colville Town are outside the playoffs on goal difference after a 3-1 win at Hales Owen Town. They were 3-up by half-time thanks to Andrew Wright, Alex Dean and Cario Mitchell, who ensured a fourth straight league win. Elsewhere, Barwell were thrashed on the road as they went down 6-1 at Banbury United, new signing Anthony Dwyer with Barwell's only goal. Loughborough Dynamo won an ill-tempered game at Mask United to move into the Northern Premier League East playoffs. They had to come from behind, but did just that thanks to Ryan Robbins and Carl Demead. Meanwhile, Quorn held High Flyers Westfields to a 2-2 draw in the Midland Football League, while Loughborough University edged out Stourport Swifts 3-2. Simeon Colborne scored another hat-trick for Heather St John's as they won 7-4 at Brockton to move 5 points clear at the top of Division 1. Hinckley AFC and Leicester Road also both won. But Harborough Town and Oadby Town were both beaten in the United Counties League, neither registering a goal. And Lutterworth Town beat Holwell Sports to move 4 points clear at the top of Division 1, having played 2 games more than second-placed Anstey Nomads.
Momentum is needed after a double setback.
Harborough Town manager Stuart Spencer admitted strong words were needed during his side's loss to Holbeach United at the weekend. The Bees were beaten 2-0 when they hosted their Lincolnshire opponents, with both goals coming inside the opening 20 minutes. It compounded the frustration of the week before when they lost 1-0 at Owen Chinex to undo a lot of the good Christmas work, which saw them collect victories over Oadby Town and Leicester Nirvana. "I'll be honest, there were a few harsh words at half-time," Spencer said. "We didn't give them a game in the first 20 minutes and found ourselves 2-0 down. We struggled there and were poor in the first half. We picked up in the second half, but they are probably the best defensive side in the league, and you can't give them a 2-goal start. I think there was a bit of a hangover from the Chinex loss. We've been on a decent spell of form and then we lost there. It's almost like we felt a bit sorry for ourselves, then having to play a side in the upper reaches of the table. We expect better of ourselves than that. It does make you feel a bit like you're back to square one after wins over Christmas. But we've recovered well from a tricky start to the season, and now we need to go again. The chance to repair some of the damage comes at Newport Pagnell Town on Saturday, and Spencer sees it as a good chance to bounce back and get their form going for the rest of the season. He explained, "It's a tough one. It's a long trek, but we've got a decent record there and we'll get stuck into it. On the back of 2 defeats, we need to make sure it doesn't become 3 and make sure we get to some kind of return. If we're honest, we're not where we want to be in the league at the moment. We're not where we're aiming for, but we still believe there is a top 8 finish for us. It's a big ask at the minute, but it's not unachievable. We need to get some form going so we can finish the season strongly and take it with us into the summer. It's an important thing. We found in the early part of this season that we had a knock-on effect from last season. Towards the end we fell away and that was carried with us into this season. We need to ensure the reverse of that happens this time. If we can climb up the table, finish strongly and take some momentum with us, that can only help us." In Division 1, Lutterworth Town remain top of the table thanks to their 5-0 victory over Holwell Sports last weekend. They will be keen to maintain that form when they take on mid-table Rushton and Higham United on Saturday, as it is their last action before the big clash with second-placed Anstey Nomads on January the 19th. Lutterworth Athletic played Rushton and Higham away from home last night, their first match since their Boxing Day defeat to their town rivals, and are on the road to Northamptonshire opposition again on Saturday when they head to Thrapston Town.
8-goal Melton puts down a marker to rivals. Melton Town finally turned their dominance into goals as they underlined their title credentials by putting 8 past Huntington on Saturday. After two very close wins against lesser opposition, despite bossing the games, Town needed a performance to show they were real title contenders. They should have gone ahead within a minute, as they got off to their usual fast start when Chris Hibbett headed over unmarked from Nathan Arnold's corner. Arnold then found himself in the box after beating Alfie Oakham, but his shot, come cross, was neatly fingertipped away by keeper Smith. Lever was played in by Reeve as another shot on the run went agonisingly wide, and Melton's total control paid off after 12 minutes, when Hill found Parsons to chip the keeper. A minute later, Smith made a great save from Reeve when 1-on-1 before Lever made it 2-0 on 15 minutes, powering a shot under Smith after Arnold and Reeve combined. 3 minutes later, Reeve returned the compliment as he raced down the wing and played a great ball for Arnold, who knocked it sideways to give Parsons a simple finish into an open goal. Reeve almost made it 4 when his overhead kick was cleared off the line by Ray and Wilson flashed the follow-up shot across the goal line. Arnold's free kick from the right found Hibbett unmarked again, and this time he controlled his header for Reeve, who was denied by a fantastic reflex save. It was 35 minutes before Huntington created their first real chance through Dombranski, who beat Gilchrist for speed but shot over the bar. Melton nearly made it 4 when Parsons went on a mazy run along the edge of the box before releasing Reeve, who again had Smith at full stretch to deny him. The resulting corner again found Hibbett unmarked, but his header found the keeper's arms. Melton came out in the second half with new determination, and within 4 minutes, Hibbett flicked Arnold's corner past the keeper for 4-0. Lever was causing Adams all sorts of problems, and from his run and low cross, Reeve stretched out a foot, but saw his efforts cleared off the line by the scrambling keeper. But Reeve got his well-deserved goal after 57 minutes, when he pounced on a through ball and rounded the keeper. Town's leading scorer was sent wide, but checked back in and floated a shot which found the far corner of the net. Substitute Reek almost scored with his first touch, following up on a rebound when Smith parried away Reeve's shot, but his efforts from out wide went inches wide. In the 66th minute, Reek again drove at the defence and teed up Parsons, who was crudely tipped by Mofosa. Parsons' penalty sent the keeper the wrong way to cap a well-deserved hat-trick. Reek then got his first goal of the season when the young forward beat the offside trap to reach a chipped ball over the defence and sent a low shot into the corner of the net as the keeper closed him down. With 2 minutes left, the rout was complete when a great ball put Reeve clear and his chip over the keeper found Price to head into an empty net. A truly resounding victory which shows Melton have started the new year with the right attitude to make a bid for promotion. Town trail leaders Lutterworth by 6 points and within 2 points of second place Anstey, who have 2 games in hand. On Saturday, they travel with renewed confidence to inform Buckbrook, who took 4 points of the top two in December. Kickoff will be at 3 p.m.
Tigers news.
Pride at stake, but third flat Heineken is hard to swallow.
Scarlets 33, Leicester Tigers 10.
For the third consecutive year, Leicester Tigers will head into their final fixture of the European Champions Cup with nothing but pride to play for. In contrast, their opponents will be gunning for the last 8. On Saturday, Tigers welcome Ulster to Welford Road, with the visitors play second in Pool 4 after a magnificent win over Racing 92 at the Kingspan Stadium at the weekend. 2 years ago, it was Glasgow Warriors who arrived in Leicester with knockout rugby on their minds. Last year, it was Racing. This Saturday is likely to go one of two ways. Tigers were taken apart by the Warriors back in 2017, losing 43-0, in a game where they were never competitive. Last year, it was a different story. Tigers pushed Racing all the way in the Welford Road snow, losing 23-20. In fact, they could easily have won with a late attacking scrum, only for matters to go awry and the campaign ended in frustration and disappointment. That has been carried over into this season with only one performance of note in the Heineken Cup. The 45-27 round two win over the Scarlets at Welford Road. Saturday's return game at Parky Scarlets did not pan out that way. The Welsh province deservedly won 33-10, and it was only two late tries from Will Evans and Mike Fitzgerald which put an air of respectability on the scoreline. In mitigation, Tigers made myriad changes to the lineup that had impressed 7 days earlier against Gloucester in the Gallagher Premiership, and they were already out of the competition before the sides kicked off. Any slender hopes of squeezing through ended by Ulster's win over the Parisians. Truth be told, though, there were no excuses. Scarlets were in the same boat, having lost all four of their pool games leading up to Tigers' visit, and they too were hampered by a lengthy injury list. They were simply sharper across the board and were convincing winners as they ran in five tries to the Tigers' brace. Scarlets took control of the game after a scrappy start, and while they improved over the course of the evening, Tigers did not until the cause was lost. It was a familiar tale of defensive fallibility and penalties conceded, which allowed Scarlets to gain their first win of the campaign. They led 12-0 at the break, thanks to tries from prop Rob Evans and skipper Ken Owens, a hooker deployed at number 8, such were Scarlets' injury woes in the back row. Had Tigers upped their game in the opening minutes of the second half, they could have got back into the picture. They weren't helped by the loss to a shoulder injury of inside centre Kyle Eastmond, which saw skipper Matt Tamua switch to number 12, as Joe Ford replaced him at fly half. And while they set about readjusting, the Hosts scored two more tries in the first 10 minutes after the break, Evans crashing over for his second, while fullback Johnny McNichol claimed the bonus point try with Leicester's cover all at sea. With flanker Mike Williams in the bin for a no-arms tackle, Scarlets winger Steph Evans went over for a fifth try, and trailing 33-0 with 17 minutes remaining, Tigers looked as though they could be on to a real humbling. The tempo dropped though, as Scarlets made changes, and Tigers did at least show some attacking intent in the final 15 minutes, with Jordan Oluwafela's break finished by Evans, while replacement forward Fitzgerald worked his way across the line inside the final 5 minutes. It was all far too late, though. Tigers have a lot of thinking to do this week ahead of Ulster's visit. They will send out the right messages ahead of the game, that's for sure, but they need to back up those words with clinical on-field execution if they are not to top and tail a poor European campaign with defeats to Ulster. In Pool 4, Tigers lie bottom of the table behind Scarlets, Ulster and Racing 92.
Local rugby.
Hinckley and Loughborough earn impressive wins. Hinckley opened their new year campaign with a comprehensive 33-20 five-try bonus point victory in front of a vocal Wharfdale crowd at the Avenue, and, in doing so, earned their first points on the road since September. Ollie Pavoas was again outstanding for Hornets, and Callum Dacey too showed a welcome return to form, with some excellent running and a brace of tries, but it was the all-round improvement of the side as a whole which was perhaps the most pleasing aspect of a hard-fought match. Wharfdale perhaps had the better of the first quarter, as Hinckley showed all the signs of a side lacking in confidence. But as the match progressed, so did Hinckley, and a stuttering, mistake-ridden first 15 minutes became a commanding second-half performance, when Hinckley first ripped the heart out of Dale with two tries in quick succession, and then restricted a desperate Dale side to a single score in the final 15 minutes, when three yellow cards saw the Hornets playing with 14 men for most of the period, and at one point finding themselves with only 13 on the field. Director of Rugby, George Shooter, was delighted with the performance. "It was good to win away from home again. We scored some cracking tries, and really had to dig deep when we went down to 13 men, but we came through against tough opposition. A great way to start the new year." A valiant Leicester Lions performance saw them overcome second place Chester 25-19. Tries from Ollie Taylor, Devon Constant and Sam Benjamin, plus two conversions and two penalties by Harry Key, saw the Lions home on a cold afternoon at TMDP Park, Blaby. Chester had ex-England player Ben Foden at fullback for the game and took the game to the Lions from the off, winger Adam King going over for a try. However, after weathering the storm, Lions hit back, with hooker Ollie Taylor pairing over for a try, converted by Harry Key, taking the score to 7-5, although they conceded again to be 12-7 down at the break. Second-half tries from Constant and Benjamin then set up the win in an entertaining encounter. In recent weeks, Lions have defeated both league leaders Hull Ionians and second-placed Chester in Blaby, a great improvement following some indifferent results. Head coach Andy Key said, "We felt we defended well in the first half when Chester did not give us a lot of possession. We gained in confidence in the second half, with the team, much to their credit, producing a deserved victory. I can feel the team improving in stature as the season has progressed."
Bonus points are a consolation after Vipers bite at the death. Market Harborough had an agonising start to 2019 as they lost to the last kick of their game, the first time that they had trailed in the match. They were beaten 28-27 by Vipers, thanks to a penalty that came deep, deep into added on time. The defeat means that Harborough dropped to third in the table, but they did pick up 2 bonus points to keep them in contention with 10 games to go. Harborough scored first though, a great team try that saw them work up the pitch through several phases with great offloads and interplay. Harry Durham rounded off the move with a great finish to score the try in the corner. They added to that with tries by Ed Parker, Adam Blatchley, Milka Basra, and a penalty and 2 conversions from Lawrence Joel. However, Vipers were always in contention, and 2 tries in the last quarter were followed by a penalty in front of the posts with time up. There was lots for Harborough to reflect on, and some key areas to improve, including first up defence and the ability to win clean ball. The Vipers' open side made several turnovers, which starved Harborough of ball and prevented them from putting multiple phases together.
No respite in New Year for beleaguered firsts. Melton RFC First 15 0, Wellingborough RFC First 15 62. The mid-season break failed to bring a change in fortunes as Melton RFC's miserable season continued with another heavy defeat on Saturday. The much-depleted First 15 suffered many hefty defeats as they lost all 13 of their Midlands 1 East encounters before Christmas. And hopes the 3-week break and change of year could revive the basement side were soon dispelled as Wellingborough came to Burton Road and departed as 62-0 winners. The home side showed all of the enthusiasm and spirit required in a dogfight, but were second best almost everywhere. The older, established players did their best and made telling contributions, especially skipper Leon Gormley, who was restored to the back row and was titanic in both defence and attack. Yet, with so many tackles to make, even the captain missed a couple. Wayne Brooks is the side's other very solid, experienced forward and made a huge difference when returning to the front row to steady the ship. But like Gormley, there is only so much one player can do. Jack Forfar and Dan Evans also made big contributions, while Archie Hutchinson and Chris Rose performed miracles while receiving most of their ball on the back foot. Ollie Circuit continued to show some outstanding moments, while displaying a brilliant attitude and gives Melton hope for the rest of the season. While Melton do not lack for collective effort or youthful enthusiasm, they are in a tough league, and sometimes Saturday's match looked like men against boys. The tests don't get any easier for head coach Gareth Collins and his troops, who now head to free-scoring league leaders Kettering on Saturday for a 2:15 kick-off.
Basketball.
Cup dream ends for women, but league win follows. Leicester Riders women split a pair of games at the weekend. On Saturday, they suffered their first defeat since the opening day of the season and were knocked out of the WBBL Cup at the semi-final stage, beaten at home by Sevenoaks Suns 83 points to 71. The Suns will meet Sheffield Hatters in the final, to be played at Arena Birmingham on Sunday, January 27th. The Riders got off to a fast start and led for much of the first quarter, but Sevenoaks then built a 23 points to 15 lead after 10 minutes. The game was tied early in the second quarter, but an 11 points to 3 run saw Suns establish a double-digit lead at 44 points to 34 as Janice McCarna scored 6 points and Jess Good capped the run with a 3-pointer. The lead then peaked in the third at 57 points to 39 on a Moncana basket that ended an early run of 10 unanswered points. Riders never got back to parity, although the lead was down to 6 at the start of the fourth quarter, with Riders trailing 61 points to 55. The Suns forced Riders into 20 turnovers and scored 24 points from those, while giving the ball up just 10 times themselves. They also nearly doubled Riders' points in the paint at 46 compared to 23. Dee Haywood top scored with 19 points for Riders, while Rebecca Navarro and Claire Paxton hit 13 each. For Sevenoaks, Good posted a big double-double of 18 points and 11 rebounds, along with 6 assists. But Riders bounced back on Sunday with an emphatic 102-50 road win against Cardiff Met Archers, keeping them top of the league. Leicester were quick out of the blocks, and the flow of points could not be stemmed by Cardiff, as they found themselves trailing by 27 by half-time. It was a tough afternoon for the Archers against the Riders' defence, as they struggled to get going with 25% shooting from the floor. The Riders shot an impressive 56% from the floor. Navarro produced a strong all-round display for Riders with 27 points on 11 of 13 shooting, along with 7 rebounds and 3 assists, while Holly Winterburn was also efficient with 20 points, including 7 of 8 from inside the arc.
The Rob Paternostro column. Lessons learnt in defeat were put to use in wins. The lessons of recent defeats have been learned, if the evidence of our two wins last weekend is considered. We had a challenging week in training, dwelling on our 35 turnovers in the previous two games, which led to 57 opposition points, and our poor shooting from long range, which put pressure on our defence. The turnaround was impressive, with just 8 and 7 turnovers in the Sheffield and Worcester games, our best performances over two games from that perspective this season. They led to just 14 points from our mistakes for our opponents, a huge improvement. We had a tough week addressing these issues, really looking again at everything we were doing, and the Riders players responded really well. It was good to see Pierre Hampton back to something like his best in the Sheffield game, with the full range of his offensive armoury on display in his 22 points in 18 minutes, after his bad run of injuries in the first half of the season. Pierre is a handful when he is in this form, so hopefully he will have turned a corner. But for that solid win in Sheffield, we got contributions from everyone, and probably the most compelling statistic is the 46 points from our bench players versus none for the Sharks. We pride ourselves in our strength in depth, and finally we were able to make it really count. While matters were relatively comfortable in Sheffield, it was definitely a different matter 24 hours later against the Wolves. Worcester must be the most talented team that has ever occupied the bottom place in the BBL, and they showed all their offensive firepower in the first half. Their American forward, Robert Crawford, was lights out in that first half, seemingly able to score at any distance under pressure. We were playing well, and our defence was not slacking, but the Wolves were deservedly ahead by 2 at half-time, and we had conceded over 50 points, a rarity. At half-time, we discussed maintaining a degree of full-court pressure so we could wear Worcester down. Meanwhile, the Wolves threw a zone defence at us, and we coped pretty well after looking ordinary when Manchester did similar a few weeks back. We were more patient and looked to penetrate the defence to turn the zone around, and it proved effective. As usual, J.R. Holder hit a purple patch late to help swing the game our way, and DeAndre Burnett was always a threat on his way to 22 points, and most importantly, without a turnover. But it was the other contributions, like from Kiefer Dowse and Connor Washington, that proved the difference. Dowse has struggled a little for form, but made big plays at both ends of the court, including a block and a couple of steals, and he gave us 28 minutes of quality play, including 6 assists and 11 points. Washington is quietly becoming a very reliable long-range threat and has 6 threes from just 10 attempts, and 25 points over the two games were important to our wins. It seems improbable the Wolves won't soon be picking up wins soon with their size and shooting, so it was a very satisfying victory for us in a high-scoring and entertaining affair. Now we take on Bristol Flyers at home this Friday in this spell of 3 home games in a row. The Flyers have done exceptionally well so far this season, built on good defence and athletic players, and they manage to stay in games, even when their offence is not clicking. We know in the BBL this season you have to be on your game if victory is to be achieved.
Connor keeps his cool as riders edge it by a point.
Leicester Riders 64, Bristol Flyers 63.
Leicester Riders edged a tight game against fellow challengers Bristol Flyers 64-63 to keep the pressure on the top end of the table. A Connor Washington free throw a minute before the end proved the decisive score, but it could have gone the other way had Fred Thomas's halfway line heave on the buzzer not come back off the ring as time expired. Riders started well, jumping out to an 8-2 lead, but with two of the best defensive sides in the league on show, points were at a premium. Riders led 18-10 after the first quarter, and 6 points in a row saw them 25-12 ahead 3 minutes into the second period. Bristol replied with the next 8 points to narrow the gap to 25-20, but Leicester were to finish the first half strongly. DeAndre Burnett and Andy Thompson combined to see Leicester finish with 11 on the last 13 points to lead 36-22 at the break. Having kept the Flyers to only 22 first-half points, Riders might have led by more at the interval, and Bristol made them pay for not taking that opportunity as Fred Thomas scored 3 three-pointers in a row as he scored 13 of the Flyers' 15 points as they cut Riders' lead to only 1. After a Thompson triple, Flyers bagged another 6 unanswered points to lead 43-41 with 13 minutes remaining, but a 4-point play from J.R. Holder and 5 from Kiefer Deuce saw Riders 50-46 ahead with a quarter to play. Justin Gray had Bristol ahead with a 3, but Deuce tied the game at 55-all. Pierre Hampton hit from long range to move Leicester in front, Gray replied to level matters, and with 100 seconds remaining, the scores were tied at 63-all. An offensive foul by Daniel Adoze, with just over a minute left, saw his reaction punished with a technical foul for dissent, from which Washington put Leicester 64-63 in front. Both had a chance down the stretch, but in a defensive affair, neither were able to take it, and Riders claimed their 9th win of the campaign.
Angling.
Informed Sisson just misses out on win double. River produced the best weights in last Wednesday's veterans match at Lakeview, with all anglers getting into double figures. Cliff Alcock edged the match from peg 1 with £41, which looked like an easy win until Pete Sisson caught 6 good fish in the last hour and just missed out with £40 from peg 5. Despite having more fish, Brian Nichols was 3rd on peg 12, where he came in with £38. On stream, Paul Hickman on peg 20 caught late on and could have taken the golden peg with more time, but he had to settle for the lake win with £29. John Cook was 2nd with just £16 from peg 8, and in 3rd was Martin Quilter with £10 from peg 17. Stream produced the overall winner at Saturday's Vets match as Pete Sisson continued his good run of form by taking £38 from peg 3, using Pellet across to the island. Next to him on peg 5, John Cook was 2nd, using the same tactic to bring £14 to the scales, and 3rd on the lake was Steve Beckhurst with £11. Weights were well down on River, and only Brian Nichols could manage double figures from peg 17 with £22 to claim the lake money. Second place went to Rob Taylor with £9 from peg 4, and Cliff Adcock came 3rd with £7. A 5th place finish was good enough for Dennis Dolby to book his place at the Midi Adrenal Bates Autumn-Winter Final last Wednesday. With the top 4 already there, Dolby landed his place with a weight just shy of £32, taken on Lagoon, peg 32. Steve Reid took the week's other qualifying spot after winning Saturday's match with £26, as less than £2 separated the top 4.
Athletics.
Feature.
Unfinished business for Bex, Melton's Iron Lady.
Top-level amateur sport is packed with challenges that would bring many professional athletes out in a cold sweat. Melton's Bex Rimmington has been through most of them and has come out the other side with a CV as impressive as it is varied. In her mid-30s, she's approaching her peak, but after hitting the wall in sport's toughest challenge, she's more determined than ever to find the perfect race.
The moment is still fresh in the mind. While the healing of time will make the memory less raw, it will gnaw away until it's put right. In more than 2 decades of putting herself through the ringer in the name of sport, Bex Rimmington had always kept her emotions in check, through extremes of physical torment, joy and despair. But then came the World Ironman Championships. It was 3 miles into the run when I started getting emotional, I knew then it was going to be a case of survival and not racing, and for me that was quite difficult. You have to reset your mindset from what you want to achieve, from going to win to just finishing, and I think that's why I got upset. Few things in sport are as exacting or plain crazy as the demands of the Ironman. Hauling yourself through 2.4 miles of open water, pedalling 112 miles, and then just a trifling full marathon to negotiate, the chance to compete at this Monsters Global Championships in Kona, Hawaii, had been the longest of shots. Rattling off an application for the specialised Zwift Academy triathlon team, Bex had all the expectations of success you'd imagine in joining a worldwide hunt for just four athletes. But the long odds came in. The humble yet determined sportswoman from Melton claimed the dream ticket, lining up as the only Brit alongside an American, a Belgian, and a German. After 6 months of bespoke training, coordinated by an expert team and buoyed by a few trips to Zwift's Californian headquarters, she duly qualified for the Worlds. She added, "What happened with the Academy was a fairy tale story. Never in a million years did I think that would happen to me. It's been crazy." Out in Hawaii, things started so well. After swimming the stretch of Pacific Ocean which had inflicted two bad jellyfish stings just days earlier in training, Bex lay 10th overall and 2nd in her 35-40 age group. With persistent frets over pacing, a few alarm bells may have rung as rivals slipped past in the circling phase. In endurance sport, fears and doubts have to be shrugged off as the mind tricks the body into further effort. Yet as running shoes replaced the cycling cleats, the finish line gradually became an ever more distant mirage. Reality finally kicked the door in. The body would no longer be fooled. It's a strange effort because it catches up with you throughout the day. It's such a long effort. You have to back off in the swim. Although physically you're okay, mentally it's quite draining. You constantly have to keep thinking about what you're doing. It wasn't just me that was suffering. Hundreds of people were walking, some were dropping like flies, but I knew I had to finish. After clocking a 4.5-hour marathon and 13 minutes shy of 11 hours since leaving the start line, she crossed the line 34th in her age group, 191st woman, and 1,234th overall of more than 2,300 finishes. With scores more athletes failing to finish, it was still an immense achievement. But when asked whether she would repeat the ordeal again, the look of incredulity that meets the question screams unfinished business. "I'm coming to terms with it slowly. The more I reflect on it, it's a big achievement to complete it, but I still have ambitions to get that perfect race out there." A new coach is in place and light training has already begun for the World Ironman, the sequel. While the 35-year-old will have to make do without Zwift's help, this time she will have the best part of a year to prepare, mentally and physically. Next time there will be no emotional moment. There was only 12 weeks between qualifying in Bolton and the championships. Doing back-to-back Ironmans, having never done one before, was a little too much, so we're going to have a different strategy next time. At the start, I knew deep down I wasn't fully recovered from Bolton, but I wanted to race and wanted to win. That was unbelievable ambition, bearing in mind it was only my second Ironman, but that's my competitive instinct. We looked into going professional next year, but we've decided to stay amateur, and if all goes well, we'll see about going pro at the end of 2019. Life revolves around sport for both Bex and her boyfriend Simon, a cyclist with the British Track Championship medal in his palmers. Both somehow make it work, despite also having to earn a crust. But their hectic schedules and extensive travelling for competition did leave the Lancashire home they share without a floor until one was recently laid. 6 years after moving in. Sport has underpinned Bex's life since the word go, and the ambition, which has driven her this far, soon emerged. "I can remember in year five being asked to draw what we wanted to be when we were older. I drew a picture of me standing on a podium next to a swimming pool." Flitting from activity to activity, Bex finally discovered a focus for her considerable energies at the pool. And then things became more serious. "I literally did everything as a youngster, trampolining, gymnastics, dancing, swimming. When I got to 9 or 10, I favoured swimming a little bit more. I was good at it and was winning, so that was a pull. I joined Melton Swimming Club and progressed from there to racing nationally. Waterfield Leisure Pool was an apt venue to launch her career in sport, following in the wake of one of Melton's most successful sportswomen. The indoor pool was opened in 1965 after a 10-year public fundraising drive, just in time to help propel Jean Jeevans all the way to the 1972 Munich Olympics. It's still a place Bex holds dear. On the morning we meet, she is already trained there, arriving in the lingering darkness of a midwinter morning during a whistle-stop return to her family home. All very far removed from the Hawaiian heat and its touchy jellyfish. I qualified for the Nationals from 13 to 18 and made the final at 50 metres front crawl. I remember leading at halfway but ended up 8th. If there were finals for 25 metres, it would have been ideal. Even as a teenager, there was a clear-headed aspiration. Reaching a national final would be enough for most of us, but it met neither Bex's drive for bigger success nor her need for fresh challenges. She diversified and threw her swimming abilities into triathlon. In a remarkable first full season, she became a European age group champion and won a big amateur race in London. She was clearly onto something, but a chance meeting altered her path once again. While I was teaching Amelia Coltman to swim, I got to know her dad, Gary. He was a talent team manager for British Cycling, but I didn't know what he did at the time. He said, "I'd like to see you cycling," and he invited me up to Manchester for training. I ended up on the track with Rebecca Romero, and they told me if I focused on cycling, I could be pretty good at it. Plotting the career trajectory of Bex Rimmington seems to follow that of your common or garden roller coaster. Where there are exhilarating highs, crashing descents can follow close behind. Such is the sporting life, particularly the amateur one. When asked to pick out the highlights of a remarkably varied and dedicated career, winning a world championship medal comes pretty high up. As pilot to visually impaired paracyclist Laura Turnham, the tandem pair won bronze at the 2009 UCI Paracycling World Championships. It came only 6 weeks after joining the British Cycling Academy. But just a few pages deeper into this chapter came one of her biggest disappointments. A failure to replicate the podium finish a year later was met with typical ruthlessness by British Cycling's zero tolerance for near misses. Part of the deal with British Cycling was that you can't work while you're on the programme, so I couldn't afford to carry on. The everyday essential need to pay the bills killed the dream. Bex knew only one way to deal with disappointment, and while getting back on the bike is a bad choice of metaphor, she did choose to push herself harder. Such mule-headed stubbornness never to accept defeat has its roots in her childhood. I have three elder brothers and we were always competitive. We used to watch the boxing and have pretend fights. I wouldn't stop until I beat them, even though I was 10 years younger. They've all been really supportive throughout my career. Making a clean break from cycling, her career took another typical tangent when a Girls for Gold talent ID session in 2008 showed her physiology suited for the water, this time without the need to get wet. That was how the rowing came about. I had to do a 60-metre sprint and was only 0.2 seconds off selection for Bob Skeleton. I think my parents gave a sigh of relief about that. While still grieving for cycling, life in a boat seemed as good a place as any to decamp. Within 16 weeks of learning to row, Bex was competing at Henley Women's Regatta and taking her first win in a single scull at Ironbridge. But, given time to heal, a return to the saddle was always inevitable. Inspired again by that yearning to right a wrong, her heart and head were finally ready to face the bike again. After a season with ambitious women's cycling setup Team WNT, she was offered a one-year pro contract as a domestique, working alongside talent such as Katie Archibald, the future world champion and Olympic medalist. Typically, the adventure would end prematurely, before the chance came to appear in the main act. Brought down while descending at 31 miles per hour in a stage race in the Czech Republic, the crash caused a broken wrist, which ultimately finished her season. There was little surprise when the contract was not renewed, but the experience had been refreshing and reviving. Now moving deeper into her 30s, Bex was on a roll. After more than 2 decades at the sharp end, she decided to expand her horizons rather than narrow them. It was time to complete the circle. I always knew I would come back to triathlon, and much better structurally from cross-training. As a female, your peak performances are in your mid-30s. There is so much expectation on young people now to perform, and they are burning out. But ironically, it's only now that I'm getting the most out of sport. Danny Rowe has just retired and she's 28. Ironically, it's perhaps because of her long amateur career, rather than in spite of it, that her love of competition remains as strong, and her body physically able to indulge it. Attempts to dampen down this competitive streak have several times foundered on the rocks of her insatiable ambition. This year, I said I'm just going to do the Ironman, I'm not going to be competitive. But then I saw the Zwift Academy and I applied for it, so my low-key year just went crazy. I've said this a few times and then something catches my eye. I'm going to be like the 85-year-old man who crossed the finish line in Kona. That was incredibly inspirational. If you're still wondering why that flaw took so long to lay, Also factor in the coaching that eats into the couple's already scarce free time. Bex volunteers at local Go Ride Club Cycle Sport Pendle, helping to train the next generation, from six-year-olds learning to ride through to teenagers learning to race. I figured I needed that balance, so I did coaching to give back to the sport. Simon is a Go Ride coach for British Cycling, so between us we could probably pursue that in the future, but at the moment we're both enjoying what we're doing. Don't expect sport to go on the back burner anytime soon, not while there are any scores yet to settle at least. Even on a rest day I feel lost, and I think, I have to do what normal people do. Sport is quite addictive, I still get a buzz from doing it. If that stops, I shall call it a day.
Top finish for HAC's Hilliam and Southwell. The year got off to a fine start for Harborough AC runners in road, indoor track and cross-country events. Ian Southwell and Pam Hilliam both finished first in their age groups in the third round of the Leicester City Winter 5K Road Race Series, accompanied by teammates Tracy Southwell, Louise McAllister and Yvonne Barber. Tom Dodd was at the first of the Midlands indoor track events, delivering consistent times of 7.62 and 7.65 seconds over 60 metres. Adam Ayles was delighted with his top 20 finish in the Northamptonshire Cross Country Championships senior men's race, while at the Leicestershire and Rutland event, 11 HAC athletes were in action across four races. Conditions seemed to suit Sarah Ward, who delivered an impressive seventh place in the senior women, and there were top 10 finishes also for Elidia McLean, fourth, and Beth Wallace, sixth, in the under-17 women. Joe O'Connor and Adam Barber in the under-15 boys, with O'Connor finishing ninth and Barber running strongly to secure bronze medal. Maurice Taylor, James McAllister, David McLean, Tom Fortnum, Gary Wallace and Ian Barber were also in action.
Nursing the New Year fitness blues. To be laid up injured at any time of year is a nuisance, but being crocked at New Year adds many extra layers of frustration to the equation. While never claiming to be the most disciplined runner when it comes to a regime, the desire to hit the pavements and shift some guilt has really been greater. Firstly, there's the New Year wave of good intentions, which annually sparks an explosion of newborn runners and gym-goers. The dark midwinter streets throng with neon-clad newbies, while gym machines are sent into overdrive to cope with January's annual influx. Every runner or cyclist encountered is equally envied and cursed as I watch them get fitter with every step. Then there is the self-help cult that chokes social media, reminding us that we are the only barriers to realising our perfect selves. There's also the matter of the surplus festive pounds lying dormant and unchallenged by exercise for weeks, adding to the increasingly unruly middle-aged spread. Unfortunately, no one has bothered to tell my appetite it no longer needs so many calories now the plodding along country lanes has stopped. But thankfully, the immune system did come into its own on this score. Worn wafer thin by desk-bound pre-Christmas exertion, it generously accepted a family-born bug on Christmas Eve. Without going into the unpleasantries, it violently stopped virtually all of the customary indulgence right across the holidays. While it did prevent further damage to the waistline, the jury's out whether it was worth the mind-bending side effects. Too weak to leave the in-laws lounge, the hosts, perhaps inwardly miffed at the prospect of this lurgy-ridden nuisance ruining their festivities, forced me to endure the stuff my nightmares are made of. Namely, 4.5 hours of back-to-back musicals, the horror. If nothing else, the terrifying ordeal finally forced me to book my first ever session of physiotherapy. It made me feel, oddly, like a proper sportsman. I'm sure this aura of an authentic athlete will come crashing back to earth on the treatment table when the first slight manipulation of muscles will leave me howling like a baby. The injury itself also gave me a mild appreciation of what pain and frustration that professional athletes suffer. It came just 1 mile into a half marathon, forcing me out of a race for the first time and reminded me how much I'd taken my fitness for granted. There was fretting before I'd even crossed the start line after the niggle picked up in the final training run returned in the warm-up jog. Maybe I could run it off, was the first tactic. When that failed, maybe I can manage it for 13 miles. Finally, after the denial, came common sense. Stop now or stop with something serious, many miles from home. Foregoing the hour spent in the broom wagon, I pulled over and faced the humiliation of walking back to the start as hundreds of fellow runners filtered by in the opposite direction. The walk back to Race HQ was humiliating and depressing, as thoughts grew of missing out on the fun and the waste of all that training. But then came thoughts of actual professionals, not the kind that weep on treatment tables, whose years of training for major championship medals are scuppered by last gasp injury. There was the unforgettable image of British sprinter Derek Redmond, helped to the finish line by his dad in the Olympic 400-metre semi-final in 1992. Redmond had realistic hopes of a medal until a hamstring chose to twang during the peak of his career and in his biggest race. Suddenly, losing 7 weeks of training for the Keyworth Turkey Trot didn't seem such a hardship. And for plodders like me, with no medals or finals to live up to, there should be plenty more fit New Years to run off the excesses. Just please, no more Mamma Mia.
Badminton.
OG's well-placed, despite injury woe. Milton Old Grammarians have enjoyed a solid badminton season, with the league programme having reached its halfway point. With membership numbers continuing to rise, and the junior and intermediate sections developing rapidly, the club is enjoying its best season for many years. On the league front, the men's first team has enjoyed success, despite injury, keeping the recognised first pairing of Steve Heath and Neil Hunt out for several matches. The season started with a good victory at home to Ashby, despite the visitors' strong first pair winning all three of their rubbers. There were two wins apiece for Steve Moises and Andy Ballard, Martin Ailey and Bruce Baxter, and Neil Hunt and stand-in Anthony Burton to ensure a good start in a strong division. Steve and Andy again won two rubbers in a narrow 5-4 defeat at Mundella, while Neil teamed up with Bruce to win one, as did Simon Lenton and Martin. But Steve Heath's absence meant the team came up just short in what is traditionally a very close match. Another 5-4 defeat followed at home to Hermitage Lakeside, as injury once more played its part, with neither Neil or Steve available. Simon and Anthony Burton performed superbly to win all three of their rubbers, while Steve and Andy snatched a rubber, but with Martin and Bruce narrowly failing to get Melton across the line. The defeat was rectified with an exciting 5-4 win at home to strong Quorn opponents who had just dropped down into the division. Steve and Andy claimed a decisive rubber 15-21, 21-14, 21-15, after Martin and Simon won two, and Neil with Bruce winning another, as OGs finished their first half of the season comfortably placed, even without their strongest team. OG's mixed team also experienced a decent start to the season, despite also having many injuries to contend with. An excellent 6-3 win at Central saw Steve Heath and Shirley Stevenson win all three, including two tight three-setters, with the pair winning the final rubber 21-19 in the third set. Simon Lenton and Linda Hallam also won all three rubbers to secure the victory after injury-affected Steve Moises and Jackie Ellis lost their three. This pattern of injuries continued to the next match at home to Trinity, where none of the OG's top three men were available. Despite a great effort by Linda Hallam and Andy Ballard, the match was lost, although Jackie Ellis, partnered by Anthony Burton, and Nicky Newman with Sly Cheung, competed well against strong opponents. The team bounced back strongly with a great 6-3 win at Huncote. Again, Steve and Shirley won a maximum three rubbers, including a classic three-setter against Huncote's first pair. Simon Lenton and Linda Hallam won two rubbers and were just edged out in a tough three-setter, and with the match hanging in the balance, Steve and Jackie won a vital three-setter to clinch a fine victory. The return fixture against Central saw OGs reduced to two couples through injury and suffered a 7-2 loss, but the team remained well-placed in their division. Now the aim will be to consolidate and improve through to the end of the season.
Cycling.
Third spots for Valley Riders as Jones wins again. Dry conditions led to fast racing at Westglebe Park as Rothwell's Richard Jones continued his winning ways in round 13 of the Central Cyclocross League. Jones, Renvale RT, finished 43 seconds clear of nearest senior challenger Gareth Whittle after an hour of action in the Rockingham Forest Wheelers promotion. There were third places for Welland Valley CC's James Moore from a field of 86 riders in the over-40 veterans race. Clubmates Louis Jacobson,
junior men,
and Jessica Ayers,
under-16 girls.
Jones had earlier been crowned overall Leicestershire League men's champion after the final round at Cato's Farm, Heather, where he finished second senior behind George Thompson,
Sleaford Wheelers.
Jones ended up on maximum points with Michael Burke,
WVCC,
third overall, William Bell,
Numplums Mountain Bikers,
and Dom Switzer,
WVC,
secured respectively the overall junior and under-14 boys titles. Josh Van Nierop,
WVCC,
finished second overall in the under-23 category, and in the veteran age groups there were second places for Welland Valley's Moore,
over-40,
Vic Barnett,
over-70,
and Nicola Trainer,
over-40 women,
with Sarah Vigro in third. In the younger age groups, Welland Valley's Eleanor Partridge,
under-16 girls,
and Andrew Dethridge,
under-9 boys,
won silver medals, and there were bronzes for Kian Trainer,
under-16 boys,
Jessica Ayers,
under-16 girls,
Luke Jones,
under-12 boys,
and Hannah Henderson,
under-12 girls.
Moore tested himself against top opposition at the final round of the National Trophy Series in Shrewsbury and from an unfavourable grid position and fought his way through to a fine 9th place with clubmate Hans Van Nierop further down in 32nd. Rockingham Forest Wheelers attracted 24 riders for their Boxing Day time trial on the 10-mile valley circuit, with the two-up pairing of Paul Beattie and Julian Freeman, clocking a respectable 24 minutes 38 seconds as fastest on the day, followed by Pete Bradshaw and Chris Fowler,
25:30.
Best solo rider was Simon Abbey,
26:09,
followed by Graham Hall,
26:30,
and David McDade,
26:49.
Fastest Welland Valley rider and winner of the Boxing Day time trial trophy was Moore, who covered the 10-mile Kibworth Base course in 22 minutes 56 seconds for victory, ahead of Tim Smith,
23:05,
and John Dernin,
23:23.
Linda Hubbub,
25:42,
was fastest woman, while quickest overall was guest Gavin Hinksman,
drag 2-0,
in 21:46.
Martial arts.
There's no stepping back now.
Sport feature.
Like many, Emma D. Fox carried the knock-on effects of schoolyard bullying into her adult life. With self-confidence and self-esteem locked in a downward spiral, Emma D. hid away, gaining weight and shedding fitness. But then, kung fu and kickboxing found her. 6 years on, she's a 4x world champion, a fighting fit size 8, and a confident teacher of her martial art with the British Chinese Kickboxing Association. Sport transformed her life and gave the Melton martial artist a voice again. Now she's using it to pass on her story and stop others suffering in silence.
It's hard to imagine now. When we meet, Emma D is self-confident, knows precisely where she's heading in life, and is armed with the determination to get there. A martial arts champion with dozens of British, European and world titles on her CV, and a teacher of 2 classes that she herself launched. But drive and confidence are new acquaintances, and without sport they may never have come to the surface. Both had been chipped away by a wearing daily routine of bullying, endured over several years. "Without kickboxing, I wouldn't have done this," Emma D says as we discuss the last 6 years of her life, and the darker, unwelcome aspects which went before. "If you told me when I started in 2012 that in 2018 I would be going to my 5th World Championships as a black sash, with 2 classes of my own, I would have said, you're having a laugh." The most damaging effects of bullying can be entirely visible. While physical pain and scars recede, the psychological baggage from regular, mental and physical abuse lingers on within, hidden from everyday view. Like many recipients of such bleak treatment, Emma D grew convinced that the only way to cope was to blend into the background and gradually withdrew into herself. "I did get picked on quite a lot through school," she explains. "I used to have things thrown at me, that sort of thing. It happened all the way through, different people all the way through, even with friends, I don't know why. I'm dyslexic, so I get taken out of English and maths, so whether it was because I was treated differently, I don't know. In the end, I just kept myself to myself. If I stayed quiet, I wouldn't be seen. When she walked tentatively into her first BCKA kickboxing lesson in January 2012, her flight instinct frantically searched for an escape route. Emedy's fitness, like her self-belief, had become an afterthought. Passive to the extreme, joining a room full of strangers to try something new was a fearful prospect. Walking into Melton's Polish club that winter's night, having finally caved into her stepfather's well-intentioned nudging, may not have been Emedy's sliding doors moment exactly, but without question it kick-started her life. My dad knows Brent, Peniston, the instructor, and started going to his classes. He said, "You'll enjoy it, come along." I didn't have very much self-confidence and said, "No, it's for boys." But then one day I just gave in and went, "Okay, I'll come." I tried to get out of my second class because I'd hurt myself, because I was an unfit 20-year-old. It didn't work. She added, "At first I started at the back, wouldn't speak to anybody. When I had to partner up, I would only do that with my stepdad. But over the weeks people start to chat to you and get to know you. Because I was with lots of different age groups, I learned to trust and find out that not everyone's the same. We started going twice a week on Thursdays and Saturdays, and then slowly built up to Sundays, Tuesdays and Wednesdays as well." The group aspect helped reconstruct social skills lost to the sniping and the blows. And what's more, she unearthed a hidden talent within the rhythms and discipline of the Chinese martial arts. When I went to my first few lessons, after it stopped hurting, I thought, I could be quite good at this. I started to get my belt, which pushed me to the next level, and then on to competitions. 2 years after her first lesson, Emma D was invited to compete at her first WKA World Championships in Portugal, winning a bronze medal. And just 12 months later, the reformed shrinking Violet returned to claim two titles. It was the start of a particularly fruitful 12-month period, as Emma D won 2 world gold medals and 4 silvers, 6 medals at the BCKA European Championship, and 10 in national competition. World crowns have been added every year since, without exception. This year, a long-term knee problem forced Emma D to concentrate her training on forms, kata, combinations of rehearsed moves, rather than the fighting. Yet still she picked up 4 medals and yet another world title last month, and then became a second degree black sash in kickboxing. Yet success doesn't bring immunity from nerves. I tend to rein them in as soon as I step onto the mat, but I still think, I can't believe I'm doing this again. At one competition, I literally stepped on the mat and realised I couldn't remember anything. I paused, did my bows, and couldn't remember what form I was doing. Luckily, it all came back in the end. But at this year's World Championships, it was the fortunes of another that took priority over her own. In November, Amy Frederick became the first pupil from Emma D's junior class to compete on the world stage. 2 of her Little Dragons class also made their debuts at the BCKA European Championships earlier this year. Amy started out with me, so that was exciting. It was more rewarding for me to see them getting stuff than it is me. Aside from bringing out a maternal pride, Emma D believes the classes for 3 to 6-year-olds can have wide-ranging benefits, exclusive of fitness. She added, "It can help children with learning difficulties such as autism when they can't get their anger out and helps them to learn discipline. At their age, it is more about developing coordination and building that up than learning anything technical." Within a year of launching Little Dragons in 2015, the person that would once go out of her way to avoid strangers had set up a women's class, an idea again motivated by her own experiences. The class dovetailed with the 2015 launch of This Girl Can, a national campaign to tackle the sharp drop-off in women practicing sport and activity after school age. It was a vacuum Emma D had been familiar with. "When I was younger, I used to do gymnastics and like basketball at school, and did horse riding as well, so I had always been active. But after primary school, I just stopped. I became one of those people who just sat on the sofa. From someone who would routinely spend playtimes indoors and later seek the sanctuary of the settee, loafing time is now much scarcer. There is just one day off a week from the training and coaching, all bolted on to her day job. Of course, there are still negative voices to face in life, but now she stands her ground. I got abuse on Facebook for starting my ladies-only classes. They say I shouldn't discriminate, but there are a lot more classes for guys, and there isn't a lot out there for just ladies." As well as passing on her martial arts knowledge and passion, Emma D is keen to use the positives from her own story. To help youngsters struggling with the twin torments of self-esteem and self-confidence, and sure there is light and plenty of it, all within achievable reach at the end of the tunnel. As well as the medals placed around her neck, she has inadvertently become a champion for the restorative effect of sport and its capacity to change lives. Brent and I go into a lot of school classes now. Longfield Academy also gets past students in to give talks, so I went in and tried to put across how much it has helped me. Kickboxing has helped me a lot. I've lost weight through it, gained confidence, and have a lot more coordination than I used to. And if it isn't kickboxing, there is something out there for everyone. That accidental New Year resolution back in 2012 even helped shape a new career path. Having loosely based her preferences around animals or paramedics, Emma D now works as a vet and is training to become a firefighter. I wouldn't be working where I am without it. I literally walked into the vets with a CV and asked if there were any jobs, and had the confidence to keep going back and asking until I got one. I also help with Trumpton, Melton's Fire Services annual fundraiser, at Christmas, and I would never have put myself out there to go along and help, being surrounded by people I didn't know. Doing that got me thinking maybe I could work here as well, and applied to join the fire service. The classes Emma D created and the story she shares are the beginnings of her own legacy, as positive as the legacy of bullying had been destructive for her. Sporting and personal success aside, there is perhaps a bigger victory achieved over those who once sought to make her life a daily torment. She has not followed their miserable negative example, nor allowed it to breed resentment and bitterness in her. Life is happy. Now, as with her approach on the kickboxing mat, there is no stepping back. I'm quite a calm person on the whole. I do get days when I feel I want to punch some pads, but not through anger, just when I've had a busy day.
Tennis.
Bolter is selected for GB Fed Cup team again. Great Britain number 3 Katie Bolter has been nominated for the Fed Cup team for a second time by captain Anne Kiothavong and will take to the court at next month's home tie in Bath. Bolter enjoyed a breakthrough year in 2018, making her Fed Cup debut with doubles win over Portugal and Estonia. She also progressed to the second round of Wimbledon after receiving a wild card and broke into the world top 100 for the first time. The 22-year-old has had a very strong start to 2019, defeating Serena Williams in the mixed doubles at Australia's Hopeman Cup alongside Great Britain teammate Cam Norrie. Bolter from Woodhouse Eaves said, "I'm really excited to be selected for this February's Fed Cup, particularly with Great Britain hosting the competition for the first time in my life. Playing as part of a team is an amazing experience, and I'm proud to be lining up with a really talented group of players." Kiothavong said, "I'm delighted to name our strongest possible team to represent GB." Katie Bolter wore the GB shirt last year for the first time, and since then has risen inside the world's top 100. We'll know more in a week's time who the other three nations will be in our group. It won't be easy, that's for sure, but it's a challenge we relish and hope to give the home crowd something to cheer about. The Fed Cup by BNP Paribas, which takes place at the University of Bath from February the 6th to the 9th, is set to be a historic event in the city as the UK plays host to the tournament after a 26-year hiatus. Often referred to as the World Cup of Tennis, the Fed Cup sees female teams from almost 100 countries compete for 8 spots in the elite world group for a chance to lift the Fed Cup trophy. Great Britain will be one of 8 nations competing in February, with each team contesting a place in April's World Group 2 playoffs.
Sports Awards.
Time to choose your sporting hero of 2018.
It's time to write a new set of names into the 14-year history of the Melton Times Sports Awards, and we need your suggestions. Nominations are now open for 13 of our award categories, and we'd like your ideas as to who should win them. New this year, the School Sports Award is open to all primary and secondary schools to reward their overall achievements on the sports field this year. It has been kindly supported by the new headline sponsors of our awards, Melton Vale Sixth Form College. We also introduce the Community Sports Award, an honour we have created to reward those who you believe have made the greatest impact on our community through sport. It's open to individuals or groups in any sport or activity. Our annual awards are open to anyone, recognising achievements at all levels over the last 12 months, from grassroots and upwards, and in any sport you can think of. They could be a friend or relative, a teammate, or someone who you have admired through our sports pages in 2018. The closing date for nominations is midnight on Monday, January the 28th, so please, don't put it off. Simply fill in and cut out the coupon printed weekly in the Melton Times and send it to Melton Times Sports Awards, care of Chris Harby, Pera Business Park, Nottingham Road, Melton Mowbray, Leicestershire, LE13 OPB. You can also nominate online at this link, www.meltontimes.co.uk/sportsawards/categories, or you can email your nominee's details to our sports editor at chris.harby@meltontimes.co.uk. This should include an overview of your nominee's achievements, with reasons why you believe our judges should shortlist them, as well as a JPEG photo where possible. Once all of the nominations are in, our judges will then draw up a shortlist of three finalists in each category, who will be invited to our Sports Awards evening on Thursday, February the 28th, at Melton Market Banqueting Suite. The judges will also decide the winners of these 13 awards, all of whom will be announced on the night. They will then draw up the shortlist for our two main awards, the Sports Personality of the Year and Junior Sports Personality of the Year. These two honours will ultimately be decided by your votes. Our judges will also name the winner of our Lifetime Achievement Award. It's a special, inspiring night, and we've had some familiar faces to help us celebrate over the years, including Stuart Broad, Sophie Hahn, Jonathan Agnew, Neil Back, Paul Anderson, and Ollie Burke. The evening always reminds us just how much talent we have right here on our doorstep, so don't let your favourite miss out on a chance to be there. Good luck.
Award categories and our sponsors.
Sportsman of the Year.
Open to over-18s from any sport and currently available for sponsorship.
Sportswoman of the Year.
Sponsored by the Army.
Junior Sportsman of the Year.
Sponsored by Brooksby Melton College. Open to 18-year-olds and under.
Junior Sportswoman of the Year.
Available for sponsorship. Open to under-18s.
Cricketer of the Year.
Sponsored by Tom Flowers Cricket Coaching.
Footballer of the Year.
Sponsored by Specsavers.
Team of the Year.
Sponsored by B&H Midland Services.
Coach of the Year.
Sponsored by Melton Mowbray Town Estate.
Junior Team of the Year.
Available for sponsorship.
Unsung Hero of the Year.
Sponsored by Colin Moulds.
Disability Sportsperson of the Year.
Sponsored by Harrison Security.
Community Sport Award.
Sponsored by Melton Borough Council.
School Sports Award.
Sponsored by Melton Vale Sixth Form College.
Judges Awards.
These are not open to nominations.
Junior Sports Personality of the Year.
Sponsored by Samworth Brothers.
Sports Personality of the Year.
Sponsored by Ragdale Hall.
And the Special Recognition Award.
Sponsored by Stapleford Park. For details of sponsorship opportunities, call Events and Exhibitions Manager Linda Pritchard
on 07837 308 942.
You have now reached the end of the audio transcription of the back page. If you'd like to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone 0116 249 8839 and leave a message on the answering machine. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.